Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari Jasodanandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Jasodanandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yashodanandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashodanandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari Gopi Janna Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yashodanandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashodanandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari जामुना चीरा वनचारी
Very nice chanting. Thank you. Dravida, you played the drum? That was fantastic. That was super fantastic.
Jai Vishnu Pad Paramahunsa Parivarajakacharja Astotra Satta Si Siman His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai Namacharja Haridas Thakura Ki Jai Prem Se Koho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai Navadvip Dham Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Ganga Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvisesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarne.
We are assembled here in New Dwarka. Today is the 22nd day of February, 2006, to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, fourth canto, entitled The Creation of the Fourth Order. Is the correct verse on the board? Okay, so that is the correct verse. Text number 67. It's the ninth chapter. Dhruva Maharaj returns home.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Atmanam cha Pravayasam Akalaya Vishampati Vanang Virakta Pratishthad Vimrishan Atmano Gatim Atmanam cha pravayasam Atmanam cha pravayasam Atmanam cha pravayasam Akalaya vishapati Akalaya vishampati Akalaya vishampati Vinang virakta pratishthad. Vanang virakta pratishthad. Vanang virakta pratishthad. Vimrishanatmanogatim. Vimrishanatmanogatim. Vimrishanatmanogatim.
Kindly do chant. any other men. Ladies. Any other ladies? Atmanam himself. Cha. Also, pravayasam, advanced in age, akalaya, considering, vishampati, king Uttanapad, vanam, to the forest, virakta, detached, pratishtat, departed, vimrishan, deliberating on, Atmanaha, of the self, Gatim, salvation. Translation, please respond. After considering his advanced age, and deliberating on the welfare of his spiritual self, King Uttanapad detached himself from worldly affairs and entered the forest. After considering his advanced age and deliberating on the welfare of his spiritual self, King Uttanapad detached himself from worldly affairs and entered the forest. Now we will hear Srila Prabhupada's purport to this verse, which is the final purport and verse of this chapter. This is the sign of a Rajarshi. King Uttanapad was very opulent and was emperor of the world, and these attachments were certainly very great. Modern politicians are not as great as kings like Maharaj Uttanapad, but because they get some political power for some days, they become so much attached to their positions that they never retire unless they are removed from their posts by cruel death or killed by some opposing political party. It is within our experience that the politicians in India do not quit their positions until death. This was not the practice in olden days, as it is evident from the behavior of King Uttanapad. Immediately after installing his worthy son, Dhruva Maharaj, on the throne, he left his home and palace. There are hundreds and thousands of instances like this in which kings, in their mature age, would give up their kingdoms and go to the forest to practice austerity. Practice of austerity is the main business of human life. As Maharaj Dhruva practiced austerity in his early age, his father, Maharaj Uttanapad, in his old age, also practiced austerity in the forest. In modern days, however, it is not possible to give up one's home and go to the forest to practice austerity. But if people of all ages would take shelter of the Krishna consciousness movement and practice the simple austerities of no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meat eating, and chant the Hare Krishna mantra regularly, in parenthesis, 16 rounds, by this practical method, it would be a very easy task to get salvation from this material world. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fourth canto, ninth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled, Dhruva Maharaj Returns Home. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. So this purport, two sections to me were very significant. Practice of austerity is the main business of human life. The contrary philosophy, which is perhaps the philosophy of modern day, is that the purpose of human life is simply to enjoy to the maximum extent the senses, the body, the mind. Indeed, sometimes when atheists are asked, since you're going to die and after death, that's it, then why are you living? And they say, because they want to experience the highest possible pleasure while they're alive, which actually has no meaning. So the philosophy of the demons, eat, sleep, be merry, for tomorrow we die, is less intelligent. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness is most intelligent. Rishabhdev told his sons to perform divine austerities. Some of the non-devotees, they are also performing austerities. You see them every morning. They're getting up early. Some of them are jogging. Some of them are going to the gym. Some are doing Hollywood yoga. Many. They're, especially if they're big, big corporations, big... They're also getting up early and performing austerities, and the demons, Hiranyakashipu, nobody can even match the austerities Hiranyakashipu performed. So demons, yes, they also perform austerities, but they're not divine austerities. The demons, the non-devotees, they practice austerities, but their purpose is to enjoy the material world. And indeed, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says there is austerity and penance in the modes of passion and ignorance and goodness. But Rishabhdev pointed out to his 100 sons that you should perform divine austerities. What's that line? Tapodivyam. Yes, tapodivyam, divine austerities. And that leads us into what Srila Prabhupada wrote at the end of this purport, as he says, in modern days, however, it is not possible to give up one's home and go to the forest to practice austerity. But if people of all ages would take shelter of the Krishna consciousness movement and practice the simple austerities of no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meat eating, and chant the Hare Krishna mantra regularly, 16 rounds. By this practical method, it would be a very easy task to get salvation from this material world. So these are the divine austerities. And Srila Prabhupada has made this the basic entry level to be a member, a bona fide member of the Krishna consciousness movement. And any serious practitioner of Krishna consciousness, before they are allowed to get initiated, they make these vows, and this is how they live their life. When Ramananda Roy was answering the question of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what is the goal of life? It was only at this point where he quoted the verse from Lord Brahma's prayers to Krishna, after stealing the boys and calves, that Brahma's prayer says that one can remain in any position in the social order, doesn't matter, but one should begin to hear from the mouths of self-realized souls the science of Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada's translation is to that verse is quite elaborate, and the reference is that this is the Krishna consciousness movement. You give up these four pillars of sinful life, begin to chant Hare Krishna mantra, and hear from the devotees the science of Krishna consciousness. And from this point, then one can progress more and more and more. But this is the bottom line. This is the foundation. And this can never be minimized or changed. This is the standard. This is our movement. This is our philosophy. And this you cannot change. You cannot, what does Surah always say, amend, alter? What's the other adjectives you use? Yes, thank you. Or verbs, Trevor. Thank you. Surah quoting Prabhupada, of course. So in the verse today, the word pravayasam, advanced in age. So Prabhupada writes, from one angle of vision, that's the age of 50, that one should begin to retire from materialistic life. And then akalaya, considering. This is what we are meant to be. We are meant to be thoughtful and considering at every moment what is our position in Krishna consciousness. Where am I at now? What is, like Maharaj Parikshit, when he decided to sit down on the bank of the Yamuna to fast for the remaining 7 days of his life, the first question is to Shukadeva Goswami, now that I'm about to die, what is my duty? So a conscientious devotee is always asking this question. What is my duty now? What am I supposed to do now? Of course, the ultimate duty, the duty that is the mother of all duties, smartavyak satatam vishnu, vismartavyana jatuchit. One should always remember Krishna and never forget him. This is the regulative principle of all regulative principles. So that is always there. That is the background. But specifically, throughout the day, the time factor is always making itself present. Krishna says, I am that time factor. Kapila Dev also emphasizes that he is the time factor. That the devotee is asking, okay, now it's such and such time. What am I supposed to be doing now? What is my duty? What is my service to Krishna at this time? So a devotee is always considering. Then we have vanam, to the forest. So I could also say that according to the fifth canto, this whole material world is a great forest of material enjoyment. And we see that Jada Bharat gave a description to Maharaj Rahugana, and then the description was repeated by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. This is in the fifth canto, how to view the material world as a great forest of material enjoyment. How the family members are like jackals. And it's a very negative, viewpoint on the materialistic way of life. Some people don't like negativity. They think, oh no, negativity is not psychologically good. You should only talk about the nice things. Just like there was a movie, Pollyanna. Is that the name? Pollyanna. Sometimes I call my wife Pollyanna Dasi. She always sees everything rosy. The girl there was this preacher. So the preacher was hellfire and brimstone preacher. And so the young girl Pollyanna was telling the preacher, well, you should speak the happy texts of the Bible. And that was like his metamorphosis, his epiphany. But that's a Disney movie. This is Srimad Bhagavatam. Both are there. Yes, there are the happy texts. You'll find many such in the Bhagavatam, but it's balance. There also needs to be negativity. Why? In order to break the illusion of this material world. If all we hear about is how nice the spiritual world is, that may not be sufficient to break our attachment to this material world. So the naked truth of this material world is also presented in Srimad Bhagavatam, both sides of the coin. positive and negative. And certainly these two chapters which I mentioned from the fifth canto, this is a very negative description. And then how does the fifth canto end? On a very negative note. You're going to hell. And it describes very graphically where we have been previously. And if someone does not take to Krishna consciousness where their ticket has been reserved already. So both must be there. And why should we hear the negativity of this material world? The next word, virakta, to become detached. To break the attachment to this material world. And what does the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita say? That with the weapon of detachment, one must cut this, the root of the banyan tree. And it's not so easy to cut the attachments. Not so easy. Not very, very easy. So we need to hear the naked truth of what this material world really is. And then, Atmana Gatim, salvation of the self, the goal of the self. The goal of the self is not to return here to this material world and take birth again. That's not the real goal. The real goal is to go back home, back to Godhead, to enter the association of Krishna and his devotees, to enjoy loving relationships with the Supreme Person. That is the goal. And what is the process? Prabhupada mentioned it. Following strictly the four regulative principles and ecstatically chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So we are very fortunate when I'm sometimes out shopping or doing so many things. The people out there in the material world, how are you doing? And I say, yes, I'm happy to be alive, happy to be chanting the holy name. That is my reason for existence. My reason for existence is simply, as I was telling somebody yesterday, we live to fight Maya another day. This is our reason for existence, to fight Maya. And how do we fight Maya? By preaching the Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada also wants us to go out there and preach the Krishna consciousness movement, to confront the conditioned souls and give them Krishna consciousness. Best defense, good offense. So we are very offensive in that sense. Offensive in the sense that we are not timid or shy to present who we are, what we are, and what we stand for. We want to give the world Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was not timid or shy. He even said, I was very bold to come to your country. And like father, like son, so we should also be like Srila Prabhupada, bold, intelligently bold. And Prabhupada has laid everything out so nicely. He's made it so easy for us. We simply have to execute the will of Srila Prabhupada. And he's given us the simple formula. Have temples, have restaurants, distribute books, preach, preach, preach. Just continue to preach Krishna consciousness. And at side by side, practice. Walk the walk, talk the talk. And every day then should be blissful. If we simply do this, we should be blissful in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. So we have a few minutes. Perhaps we could have some discussion on the science of Krishna consciousness. Who would like to open the floor for discussion? I think Dravida has his head raised with the eyes glowing. Give him the microphone, please.
Yes, I the balance between the nectar and the chutney, so to speak. I don't know what you want to call it. The loving exchanges of Krishna, the pastimes, the qualities of Braj Bhakti. And what we find in the fifth canto, now, and other parts of the Bhagavatam, there seems to be, even in the Bhagavatam, an emphasis on this heavy preaching of the austerity. Even in the lead up to the tenth canto, and even within the tenth canto, there's so much straight philosophy, an emphasis on austerity, on leaving home, the forest, the horrors of the material world. Every canto has it. Don't you think that's a little bit of an overemphasis? I mean, don't we need more of the attraction of the beauty of Krishna? I know some people think like that.
So the problem is that when you're sick, you cannot expect to live the same way you did when you were healthy. When you're sick, that necessitates austerities and penances. Denial means taking medicine. And traditionally, medicine doesn't taste good. And it means you can't do what you normally do in a healthy state because you're sick. The conditioned soul has AIDS. What is that AIDS? Avidya. The conditioned soul is inflicted with ignorance. And depending on the degree of the ignorance, then there's going to be so many instructions which pertain to that particular conditioned soul. So the negativity is there to cure the disease. Once you're cured, yes. Then now you're in a healthy state. Now you are eligible to actually entertain the happy text, the blissful text, the nectar text. But in the disease condition, even you're trying to taste the nectar, still going to taste like poison. Bhagavad Gita says the mode of goodness is poison in the beginning, but nectar in the end. Rupa Goswami points out, Chat Krishna nama charitari sitaptya vidya pito patapta rasanasya narochikanu. That in the disease condition, Krishna's name, which is the sweetest of the sweetest thing, tastes very bitter. It tastes bitter. But this is the medicine. So you mentioned, you said it, both are there. The sweet and the sour. So it's like a sweet and sour sabji, Bhagavatam. Both are there. And in the healthy condition, you relish both, sweet and sour. You're relishing it. After all, who's speaking Srimad Bhagavatam? Shukadeva Goswami. He's not a diseased conditioned soul. Do you think that he was like unhappy because he was reciting fifth canto? He was also in ecstasy. He was in ecstasy when he was pointing out the hellish life. So in the disease condition, we have this problem of making the negative and the positive. But the idea is to get free. But as you take the medicine of Krishna's name, of Srimad Bhagavatam, the positive and the negative text, as you take the medicine, you're starting to get cured, little by little by little. I'll be very honest, when I first joined this movement, I did not like Bhagavad Gita. I didn't like it. I never read it. 20, 30 years later, now I love Bhagavad Gita. I can read it over and over again. There must have been some cure, right? So we see this with, as you make advancement, then you begin to taste the different aspects of Krishna consciousness. And we get more and more cured, more and more cured. And then you pick up, whether it's second canto or 11th canto, it's nectar. There's a lot of nectar. And even in the first canto, there's lots of nectar. But you have to be able to taste it. Therefore, get cured. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu?
But I have a doubt.
You have a doubt?
Yes, and I want
I'm
to
sure it's rhetorical.
You mentioned that, quoting Rupa Goswami, that it's bitter in the beginning and nectar in the end when you get cured of the disease. Now, but we see that in modern day, there are many yoga societies, and it has become fashionable to chant, even sometimes chant Hare Krishna.
Yes.
And they chant, and people like it. Otherwise, they wouldn't pay and spend hours chanting. What are they getting there? It doesn't seem bitter. It seems like they're getting some kind of sweetness. And yet they're not maybe not following even the four regular principles.
Give the microphone to Suradas. He would be most authoritative to answer this question since he has direct experience of this. I am not qualified to answer this question in the presence of Sura Maharaj. It's on, Sura.
According to Srila Prabhupada, the other day we read in class that even though it's the chanting of Hare Krishna, if it's done by non-devotees or professional people, there is no benefit. Of course, the holy names of the Lord are transcendental, coming from the spiritual strata. So if anyone chants impurity one time, there's unlimited benefit. There's spiritual, total spiritual benefit. So it's kind of hard to understand, but as Vaishnavas, we should not associate with those who are non-Vaishnavas, even if they're chanting Hare Krishna, unless they're inquisitive to become Vaishnavas. And therefore, it's the duty of Vaishnavas to go and replace the non-Vaishnavas chanting in these public places. That's our business. That's our family business. That's our life business.
Dravidadas, I will answer your question in this sense, since you said you had a dilemma or doubt. I would say that offensive chanting is better than no chanting. So let's say they're chanting with offense. So that chanting is better than no chanting. What would you say to that? Give him the mic, please. I want this.
It wasn't so much in that regard, although that's a very important idea, but it says in the Upadeshamrita, as you quoted, Syat Krishna Namajan, it's bitter. But it appears that the holy name is not entirely bitter, even for, you know, we'll call them neophytes in this regard, or even even ourselves. You know what I mean? You walk in the door and someone is chanting. Of course, it's much better if you're chanting here, but any time you chant, if you're focusing, there's some taste there. And it seems not to be bitter. It's not as sweet as what Rupa Goswami's tasting or what Prabhupada's tasting. So my question, and it's an honest question, is there that it seems like the holy name is almost sweet in any form, rather than have this idea that it's so bitter, but you have to take it anyway.
Are you disagreeing with Rupa Goswami? I don't think you're saying that, sir.
No, I'm just...
He
I'm
does say...
Question.
Doesn't Rupa Goswami say that?
He says it's bitter.
Yeah, so why would you want to give a different purport?
I'm not giving a different purport. I'm just saying that there's got to be a sweetness. Otherwise, people wouldn't be spending money and listening to the holy name.
He saying it's bitter? You see, I'm sorry. It appears to my neophyte ears that you're giving a contradictory or a spin on Rupa Goswami. Hey, now, give him the mic. I want to hear this. Wait. Slow down. The world has to hear this.
Question. I'm asking, there is a sweetness there. Yes, there's benefit if you chant even offensively. But it's not a question of benefit. There's even nectar there, even if you chant offensively.
Yes, but...
So, we have a...
Wait. Bring the mic over, please. We're having a very intense discussion here.
I don't know if I can really explain this, but I think when Srila Rupa Goswami speaks of it being bitter, he's talking about the chanting of a person who is more approaching self-realization, and that person is applying himself to the tapo divyam, the divine austerities, like you know, giving up intoxication, eating meat, giving up sex life. And so that's bitter. And so when you chant Hare Krishna and you're trying to give those things up, it is a very bitter thing in the beginning, and then it becomes nectar in the end. But the people that Sura Prabhu goes to chant with, they aren't necessarily trying for those divine austerities yet. So they get a taste, and that preliminary taste is because of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his movement, to this Sankirtan movement. It's to allow us to get that preliminary taste, which is so fundamental for anyone who is going to begin to even think of beginning to take up divine austerities. Is that right?
I'm simply listening. I'm not commenting. Bhrigupati has, because the jury is not out yet on this topic. Still out, whatever.
Well, I'm not in their minds or bodies, so I can't say with absolute certainty what they're experiencing, but I don't think they're getting a taste for chanting. I think that they're enjoying chanting. It's like they're there with a bunch of other people, and they're all doing something, and they're getting off on the whole experience, just like people go to concerts, and they look like they're in ecstasy.
So you would say it's a material shadow.
That's what I think.
Of what real chanting is.
But I don't know because I'm not in their bodies, so I can't say for sure. But I think it's something material.
Okay, we have some hands raised. Govinda Dutt, it's his turn. I love this. This is good.
Yeah, I agree. There are different levels to be explained. For instance, of course, Rupa Goswami, he's on the topmost level. And he would not appreciate the chanting of someone who's not chanting for spiritual benefit. It's like we had a poster up recently, someone tore it down. Who's this guy? He eats beef and he's chanting Hare Krishna and he has some concert going on here. What business do we have going there? Because we're on a different platform. So those who are, I agree with Bhrigupati Prabhu, those who are chanting, of course we don't know why exactly who all are in the audience and why they are chanting. But those who are chanting for material benefit, even if it's Hare Krishna, as Rupa Goswami says, it's offensive, and we should stay as far away from that place as possible.
Okay.
But if they're chanting for spiritual benefit, then the devotees, they're anxious to participate in that.
Okay, Dravida, and then Sura.
Sorry, sir. I'll give it back. We have time. I had maybe an idea. I'm really thinking this through. I'm not
okay. So you are being genuine here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. I thought you were being a little rhetorical.
No. So in the context now, if I may quote one shloka, it just came to mind.
Who's going to stop you?
At one point in the Nectar of Devotion, Rupa Goswami describes the different levels of happiness, the comparison of material happiness to Brahmananda to Bhakti Rasa. So he says, well, material happiness is insignificant compared to Brahmananda, but Brahmananda, the happiness of liberation, is just like a drop of water in the ocean of happiness. So there's like a hierarchy there. So in another context, he says, Tava jayati nanda nandana padada vindoda bhakti makabanda jiyan madhuri lavagri mukti sukham shukti tamiti. So he says, oh, glories, oh, nanda nandana, Krishna, to the drops of nectar of the service to your lotus feet. Even just a drop of that flood of nectar, actually, makes the happiness of Brahmananda seem as insignificant as an oyster. Now, very bitter and insignificant. So, in the context of the Upadeshamrita, which next verse he says, the essence of all advice is to chant day and night without stopping, if we try to do that now, we'll find it difficult, even in our state. So even the aspiring devotee finds the constant chanting of the holy name difficult, maybe like bitter, you know, to do that. Although we may find some nectar in the holy name. And so therefore he, Rupa Goswami, who says, let me have millions of tongues, millions of ears, that's the sweetness he's tasting. Compared to that, the sweetness that comes even from neophytes, what to speak of those who are getting a reflection of the holy name, is very insignificant and is compared to bitterness. And then, of course, there's the idea of Ashuti Smriti Puranadi Panchadatta Vidhingana. Any bhakti, so-called bhakti that's being engaged without reference to the Shuti Smriti's four regulating principles is a disturbance in society. And we can...
And we'll give the final word to Suradas, and then we will break for breakfast.
The thing that's bewildering to some extent is there are, we come in contact with many other sampradayas. For instance, Shivananda Yoga and Nim Karoli Baba, the Sikhs who chant Vedic mantras, who chant the Hare Krishna mantra as part of their austerity and penances. For instance, Shivananda Yoga, they follow the four regular principles, or they're told to. And they're told to chant, and they all know the Maha Mantra. They call it the Maha Mantra. And even if they chant to Shiva, to Brahma, to Ganesh, to Durga, the final that they do at the end is the Maha Mantra, because they know that's the Maha Mantra. They know. So the bewilderment is that they're non-Vaishnavs, so the benefit is not there for Vaishnavs. But yet, they're performing austerities and penances of following four regular principles, and they're chanting the Maha Mantra. So the question that could be raised is, why aren't they? And they claim to be getting a taste. They're controlling their mind, their senses, to some extent, some of them. And they're chanting, seemingly in ecstasy. So the question would be, why aren't they getting any benefit? Why isn't it tasteful? It appears to be tasteful to them.
I would say it depends on their understanding. If their understanding is ultimately impersonal, then they might be experiencing a shadow of Brahmananda, the impersonal bliss. Or like Bhrigupati pointed out, which is what I lean towards, it's a different or a higher phase of simply material enjoyment. Or if they're not offensive and they actually do understand that God is a person, then they might be approaching some bhakti. Given what you said, they're following the regulative of principles. And if they're chanting and they're under the conception that God is a person and not impersonal, then that would be approaching the bhakti threshold. I think we should end the discussion here, and thank you for your participation. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.